Yeah, I said we'd never say that, and I've gone and done it straight away, so apologies, everybody. Anyway.
Hi, I'm Darren Woolley, founder and CEO of Trinity P3 Marketing Management Consultancy, and welcome to Managing Marketing, a weekly podcast where we discuss the issues and opportunities facing marketing, media, and advertising with industry thought leaders and practitioners. If you're enjoying the Managing Marketing podcast, please either like, review, or share this episode to spread the words and wisdom from our guests each week. Now, since the pandemic, there's been an increasingly vocal call from agencies around the world to ditch the pitch, and trade media have run headlines and opinion pieces claiming the pitch is broken and even dead. As Australia and APAC's leading pitch consultancy, we noticed that while there are plenty of opinions, there was very little data on this topic, so we undertook our own research called The State of the Pitch in Australia. Run from June to December last year, the report makes interesting reading on what's going on and what's going wrong with pitching. Well, today we have many of the Trinity P3 team involved in the pitching process to discuss and share their thoughts and insights on the State of the Pitch in Australia research. So please welcome to the Managing Marketing podcast from Trinity P3, our pitch whiz, Kylie Ridley-Dutton. Hi, Kylie.
Hi, happy to be joining today.
Thank you. General Manager Lydia Feely. Hello, Lydia.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
The exceptional Ellie Angel. Hi, Ellie.
Hello. Nice to be here.
The ROI guy, Anton Bushner. Hi, Anton.
Hi, Dan.
And last but not least, Lord Nathan of Hodges. Nathan Hodges. Hi, Nathan.
Hello. Sorry, just coming off mute there. Unbelievable.
I was about to say, I think you're on mute, Nathan.
Yeah, I said we'd never say that, and I've gone and done it straight away, so apologies, everybody. Anyway, hello, glad to be here.
Now, there was quite a lot in the research, and I thought today would be a good opportunity, having so many esteemed pitch consultants here on the call, on the podcast, to actually talk about some of the insights. So the first thing I thought would be worthwhile starting with, you know, what was the most surprising thing you read in the report about the state of the pitch in Australia?
Well, I had a kind of a positive surprise. Reading that 55% of responses indicated a very communicative pitch and 65% of responses suggested either open and constructive feedback at some or all stages of the pitch. Actually, look, obviously things could still improve, but I found that relatively encouraging because there's so much negative noise out there about agencies not getting proper feedback. It's something that we obviously practice a lot. And I think this part of pitching is really important. So I was kind of positively surprised to see that it got that high. And obviously it's something that we all need to keep working on with every pitch that we run.
Yeah, it was surprising that, you know, quite a significant number of pitches seem to be pretty well run, you know. So I think what it shows is that there's something triggering this response, particularly from agencies when they go wrong. Anton, what's your interpretation? What caught your eye?
Yeah, I agree with Ellie. Lots of really good numbers and good feedback. But I picked out one of the smaller numbers that was a bit of a concern. 13% of pitches had no apparent outcome. Now, made me think of a few things. Made me think of, was the pitch still running? Obviously, at the moment we did the survey, that could have been happening. Was the client actually going to make a decision, or was the decision just going on and on and on for some unknown reason, or were they actually sticking with the incumbent? And there was all sorts of things behind the scenes that may have been going on. So I think when we see numbers like the pitch is dragging on and not closed, it just raises some concerns and sets the hairs running. We've certainly seen some pitches that we've facilitated where it's just gone on and the poor agencies have no idea what's going to happen as the next step.
Yeah, Anton, just to add a little bit of illumination, I don't have the definitive, but it was a combination of all those things. Sometimes it was that the agency was never informed, they were just left hanging. Others is that they were eliminated at an early stage and the pitch was ongoing after they'd been eliminated. So that's two of the things that could have been driving that. Nathan, what was your big call out?
Well, at the risk of being negative after two positive comments, I was still surprised at the number of organisations that seemed to be lurching into a pitch ass backwards without any planning, any kind of a view of what the outcome is going to be, and without any management of the stakeholder group, which leads to all sorts of desperate outcomes, like long pitch participation lists, not feeding back to agencies that are taking part, leaving people hanging, announcing the result before you've even talked to the agencies that actually tabled proposals. And that just seemed to be persisting across the board. Amazingly to me, even with some consultant-run pitches, which really astonished me. I mean, God knows we work hard enough to try and stop those outcomes, but it still seems to be out there. So it was more than the qualitative, anecdotal feedback that we constantly get. It was proven in the data. And that for me, says we've all got work to do.
Now, I want to clarify about the consultants because, you know, a lot of people think that Trinity P3 got the 15% that were consultant-run pitches. When I dug into that, we got about 5% of all pitches. And interestingly, just from the methodology associated with some of the other consultant-run pitches, it seems that there's actually quite a few procurement consultants running pitches. So people that are brought in as consultants to procurement rather than as pitch consultants. So that in the next round of the research, we're going to try and call that out a bit more. Kylie, you manage quite a lot of pitches. So, you know, from your first-hand experience, you must have had a perception. Did the research support your perception, or were there some things that you thought were surprising?
I think the surprising thing for me was one of the call-outs was that agencies were prepared to participate in a pitch that was only for the value of $50,000 and it was a full process pitch that they had to participate in. Often we get agencies not complaining but just verbalising to us the amount of resources and therefore the cost to the agency to actually participate in a pitch. And I know that we've written a number of blogs over the years also on the topic about, you know, how much on average it does cost for an agency to participate in the pitch process. So, you know, it's a bit scary that agencies have gone full throttle and put the resources and spend behind the agency for an outcome of $50,000.
I found that surprising too, which is that the support, it suggested that maybe too many marketers and procurement teams are still using like a one-size-fits-all approach for their pitches. And I think that's what's, you know, following on from what Kylie was saying. And that's what, you know, it could be like it's a very different process for a $50,000, you know, project compared to like a $10 million retainer account. But sometimes they're using the same pitch process. So yeah. I found that a bit surprising as well.
Absolutely. Just going back to Kylie, your point, some of the agencies did make comments that the particularly procurement were very hesitant to give any indication about the size of the price. So I wouldn't put it totally on the agencies if you're thinking that they went into it knowing it was $50,000. I think they probably went into it thinking it was a lot more and ended up like, surprise, you won, but it's only worth $50,000, which is not a big pleasant surprise.
Well, I guess, therefore, that goes back to, you know, one of the problems with the pitch process and the data that we've seen, that transparency up front and how much, you know, information is given at the get-go of a project to get commitment from these agencies, you know, going into the dark, not knowing what a budget is, not knowing what the requirements are. It's pretty scary that agencies have to commit to that sort of process without all of the bedding put in place.
I think agencies should decline pitches like that.
Agree.
I really do. I just, it's not, and you know, this is a much broader discussion about the general dynamics in the marketplace that lead to some of these problems. But for an agency not to be told even the basics about scope of work or size of prize is that's fundamental flaw and, you know, doesn't allow them any fair opportunity.
Trinity P3.
One of the things that did surprise me is how many of the pitches, even though it went from $50,000 in a project to a $10 million global media pitch, were largely, you know, 3/4 of them were using the same methodology that's been used for the last 30 or 40 years. So I'd be interested to know, you know, what did you see, anyone, as the most interesting pitch practice or that you've heard or seen of outside of this research?
The most interesting, the most effective pitches always go back to what you're trying to achieve in terms of your overall roster model, all of your agencies. You replace one of your agencies or change out one or two of your agencies and you affect everything that all the other agencies are doing. It's particularly true these days where agencies can offer a multitude of services and a multitude of disciplines for any client. So for me, the most interesting and the most effective pitches are the ones where you have a model at the beginning and you tolerate some ambiguity as to who should play what roles in that model during the pitch, and you end up being very flexible and yet quite clear about what the roles are that those agencies will populate at the end of that pitch. It's a hybrid pitch. It does require, of course, some tolerance for ambiguity on the parts of the marketer, which also means that you need to get your ducks in a row. You need to get things sorted. You need to do the thinking ahead of time before you run into the pitch. But if you can get that right and you've got an organization that's tight and focused and behind you on that, then that's always the best way to go. Remember, we always say, every agency that you add to your roster typically costs you between 12 and 15% in inefficiency thereafter. So the smallest number of agencies you can have on your roster to do the job, that's the way to go.
But do you think having that set up front should more inform the process going forward? Because what we're seeing is the same process is being applied. You know, it's an RFI / credentials, then it's or chemistry meetings, then there's some sort of speculative creative or media buying exercise, and then negotiations. It's like bang, 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 you know.
Yeah.
Do we get people to go from one size fits all to actually understand that there's many different ones?
Indeed, because it betrays the lack of understanding of what the outcome needs to be. That's betrayed by the fact that the same process seems to be applied each time. Someone picks up a book from ISBAR or picks up a book from the IPA and goes, that's the way you run a pitch. Of course, it's not. You know, one of the most interesting things we've been doing recently is looking at all sorts of capability, like management capability, not just creative or strategic or media buying or those things, but actually account management, business management capability in a pitch, testing that during the course of a pitch. Yeah. And that really does kind of sort out the leaders from the losers.
Anton, I'd be really interested your perspective, particularly around the rise of technology, because a lot of those pitch styles don't actually apply themselves very well to the application of technology, do they?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll pick up on Nathan's point that in the digital realm, what is called digital and technology, it's absolutely something that needs to be focused on and customized and get into the real issue that the client's facing. I saw this on a pitch last year. Going back years ago, digital agencies were relatively easy to put into a bucket. So you could run a standard process, but now it needs to be fully customized. We had a global franchise group. And when I mention the word franchise, you can understand technology systems, issues, debates, etc. There was a global team and a local team. So everyone had different requirements. The client had fired their current agency, had come to us and said, we've got a caretaker agency at the moment, but they're on a defined time limit. So we have to run a pitch within a time limit. That was the first thing. And then I started delving into it with them and saying, okay, well, what do you actually need? So we had to really refine based on tech requirements to start with, then marketing requirements, and then customer consumer requirements. And interestingly, as a part of this pitch, we did test capability, as Nathan talked about, but the client decided to give access to the back end of their website. Now, that was interesting because it gave the agencies the chance to look at data, look at issues, run a mini audit, and fully tailor their recommendations to say, here's where you're exposed, here are issues, I can see you've been hacked, et cetera. So that raised a whole new kettle of fish in terms of the marketer being able to look at the expertise and the capability of the agencies. And the client's very happy with the outcome.
You're both raising really good points which came out of the research, which is this diversification of disciplines or capabilities required in a pitch. Lydia, do you have a perspective on that?
I do, yeah. Well, the focus, what I think is interesting is it still seems to be, you know, in the trade press, either a creative pitch or a media pitch. Mm. But what we've seen in the market, you know, definitely is just the need for a multidiscipline, you know, requirement or, you know, a pitch. So I think people, and it goes back to Nathan's point in terms of, you know, consolidating rosters or what they need. And that often, and then what we're seeing is that, you know, they'll try and find, you know, clients will try and find one agency that can do the most, and then they'll fill the gaps with best of breed or specialist agencies.
I want to pick up on what Anton said about that experience there, and to point out that for those kind of different processes to take place, the client needs to enable that. How many pitches have we been in where the agencies ask for access to any kind of data back end so that it can do? I mean, we see it in media with search and performance media. We see it with web UX and design, and the client won't allow it. So I think that, you know, they have a role to play as well in enabling these kind of processes to take place so that we can you get to a better solution as a result. They need to be a bit freer in the pitch process with their own data.
Look, I think pitching certainly become more complex, but and so that throws up new challenges, more complex challenges. But it seems that we still do the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different outcome. And perhaps it is time that the pitch process not just change so it becomes another one process, but changes so that we have a lot more different approaches that can be applied for different needs.
Trinity P3.
I just want to change the focus a bit. Was anyone surprised at the average score of, I think it was 3.1 or 3.2 out of 5? Was that a surprise, or was everyone thinking that was fairly normal?
I thought it was low, because when you take out the natural bias of the people who won it, thinking that it was a great process, then the rest of it's a pretty depressing picture. And I don't want to keep wearing the kind of black hat in this conversation, but I kind of looked at it and went, yeah, that's about right. If you take out that distortion of the ones who gave it 5 out of 5, because, you know, to the victor belong the spoils. I don't think pitching's in a great state. And I think, you know, like I say, we've put some data around what we all knew anecdotally and qualitatively. But that's a really important thing to do, because when you've got quant and qual, of course you can make a decision on what happens next.
Okay, so let's not black hat this. Let's look at and talk about some what's the one thing that you think that marketers, procurement and consultants should be doing, and I'll go around the room, should be doing to try and get a 5 out of 5, not a 3.1 out of 5. And look, I do know we're all pitch consultants here, so it can't be hire a pitch consultant, okay? Because even the pitch consultants in the survey, in the research, got it wrong. Ellie?
I've got three of them.
It's
what I do. I don't know.
I will over deliver
and have a promise. So look, very, very briefly, goes back to what Nathan was saying earlier, but have some clarity. Have some clarity of objectives, of process, of methodology before you start the pitch, as opposed to trying to work it out as you go along. I think the second is balance and objectivity, you know, minimization or removal of any subjective agendas that do happen in pitches, you know, work that out beforehand so that it's a clean process. And finally, respect. Respect for that clarity that you've already instigated, respect for the process, and respect for all the participants in the process. Those are the three that I think would really help improve.
Very useful. Thanks, Ellie. Nathan?
Well, obviously, I would have said everything that Ellie had said there, but she's already said it, so that's very annoying. So I'll just say one thing. Keep to your timing. Just keep to set a time scale and stick to it. If you want one thing, that's it.
Kylie?
I think this is really covered in Ellie's points as well, but just be clear or be able to clearly articulate to the participants in the process of your future state. So can you share maybe a one-pager of what your business strategy is that is linked into your marketing strategy? Because that's obviously going to have a huge effect on the actual agency partners that will help get to that future state.
Yeah, it is interesting that because, you know, in many ways you're choosing an agency, hopefully, to solve some problem or challenge long term. And not sharing that with the agencies that you're engaging seems pretty crazy, because how can you get to that successful outcome? Anton, what's your perspective?
Yeah, look, I've just got the one. I think agreeing who's decision maker on the marketer's side. I've heard stories of, you know, marketing will make the decision and then suddenly the CEO comes in and changes decisions. So being very clear on the marketing side, you know, who needs to be involved, IT might need to be involved, the media lead, brand lead, C-suite, whoever it is, and make sure that they are meeting the agencies. It doesn't have to be all the way through the process, but I think at least being involved, not coming in right at the end and just putting a bit of a stamp on.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the big issues was that while there was a reasonable level of engagement, you know, the where it went wrong was where that communication and engagement stopped for some reason, you know, and what happens in that place is that, of course, agencies participating in a pitch start to speculate as to what's going on and what's going wrong. And in that vacuum, you know, they can be very creative and very cynical. I think that's one of the key issues about treating people with respect and keeping them informed.
I was going to say that was, you know, one of the key points as well is that maybe people get caught up a bit in the formality of the process, that they forget sort of the basic business etiquette, things like we just talked about, you know, like keeping agencies and stakeholders informed of timings and what's required, and then feedback along the way. So just the basic table stakes. I think I found that quite surprising, actually. But it could be that it's just the format. They set up this process and almost like keep it so formal that they forget the basics.
Well, one of the things that I noticed, and not in the research, but just generally, is how often marketers and even procurement people are either unwilling or incredibly uncomfortable with providing honest, constructive feedback. And I wouldn't mind exploring that a bit if we could. You know, what is it, do you think, that stops them, you know, giving that feedback? Because I have to say, the number of agencies that have said to me, we're a close second. Now, you just know that many agencies couldn't be a close second. So what is it that people are deferring to a nice brush off to do that, Kylie?
Human nature. Everybody wants to avoid conflict, and if they can get out of conflict, they will.
You think that's all it is, human nature? Because obviously I didn't get that gene. Maybe I'm not human.
There's a few exceptions of the rule, and I wasn't going to actually mention names.
Well, there you go. I outed myself. Ellie.
I totally agree with Kylie that it is human nature to a certain degree, but I think there's a lack of professional empathy. I mean, it's to Lydia's point as well. There's a lack of professional empathy for agencies in a pitch process. That still exists, the master-servant mentality. But I also think it goes to what we've talked about before. If there's a lack of proper process, which would include lack of proper assessment, that leads to lack of proper feedback. So all of these issues are intertwined. But I think fundamentally, I don't like to see those dynamics still exist, but I think they do. Plus human nature, as Kylie said.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because in many ways, the pitch is starting a commercial business relationship. And the way you start it should be the way you would want it to continue. And making it quite transactional and even a little unprofessional is never going to set up the relationship for being the most high-performing or productive possible, is it?
Yeah. I think it depends. That depends on how you define high performing. And I think there are different stakeholders within an organisation and the culture of the organisation that will define what high performance for an agency means. And, you know, in other words, it could be just cheapest possible cost, highest possible efficiency, greatest possible demand, and very, very different from what we would define as a high value relationship. So I think those things come into play.
Okay. Anton, what's your perspective?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. This whole sort of where does the relationship start? And I think a lot of either procurement or marketing teams start to go, well, this process is not the start of the relationship. It's just a process to get to a start point. So I think that's the problem. And Ellie, I was going to push it further. It's disrespect. I think you're right. If you're going to choose a partner, it is quite disrespectful not to keep people in the loop, not to give constructive feedback. And Kylie knows this as well. It takes a lot of time to run and facilitate pitches. So I think the admin and time to invest in contacting all the agencies, giving them the right feedback, is quite an arduous process. I'm not pushing our barrow just to say use us as a pitch consultant, but I think for anyone running a pitch, it's a huge amount of time, and often people don't have that time, and therefore they default to, well, I'm not going to tell the respective agencies. Another dimension, too many agencies in the mix. So they're looking at too many, too wide, too much to manage, and can't give the feedback to all of them. So that adds up to a bit of a train wreck in my books.
Lydia, you've got a perspective on this, haven't you?
Yeah, I was going to say. So I think sometimes a lot of CMOs think it's part of their job to run a pitch so that they feel like they can't, outsource it and they have to do it. And there's two things to that. One, they go into it thinking it's relatively simple, then find it's complex and it takes a lot of time. And that means that they then can't participate so much in the pitch because they're so busy facilitating it and all of the stakeholders. So I see that a bit. I was going to also touch on the fact that when we do run a pitch with someone, I've had so many wonderful clients who are really conscious of giving feedback and really put some time to giving feedback directly with the agencies that have been successful or unsuccessful throughout the process. So, it just probably frees them up to be able to do that as well. So I wanted to call out the good clients that we see.
I mean,
Oh, look, I think there are clients that are willing and able to do it, and you should do it because it rewards the agency, gives them something as a reward even if they're unsuccessful. You know, getting constructive feedback that they can actually then take forward and use next time means that they constantly get better. But, you're a close second is not very constructive because what the hell am I going to do with that? Nathan, you and I, and most people would not realise that Trindy P3 also has to tender for work. You know, and it's surprising how many agencies grumble to us and we go, we understand because we go through the same thing, particularly with procurement. Yeah. And, that early engagement stage really does give us some insights into how this relationship's going forward.
Yeah.
When you're treated almost like a vendor in quotes, which means lots of demands but very little given back in return.
Yeah, so there's two ways it goes typically. That's one, that you feel like a vendor, you're just form-filling, you're doing lots of compliance work and then you get nothing back. So that speaks volumes as to what the relationship would be like. The other one is where people mix personal and business and refuse to kind of split those two things out. It's not personal, it's business. If you want to get a friend, get a dog, don't get an agency, right? So, and from good professional business relationships, that's where personal relationships can spring. But without that, the personal relationship is nothing. It's nothing, it's built on sand. So the more people can kind of just toughen up here a bit as a marketer going into a pitch, if you're going to run it yourself, toughen up and be ready, not just to have lovely kind of meetings with people and great kind of presentations and great chemistry, but also to be able to say the hard things, because that's how any good business relationship is going to work. This is business, it's not personal.
Yeah, Kylie, what's your perspective on this?
I think Nathan just took the words out of my mouth. I think that's another part of why clients are scared to give feedback, because they think it is personal and they're going to be picking on people in particular, too many P's there. But it is a business relationship, which doesn't mean you don't have respect for people. However, the business will actually be more grateful, or the agency, if you do have constructive feedback to give them. And it doesn't have to relate to individuals as such. But I think that's a big part, again, of why clients are scared to give the feedback.
But, Kylie, do you think in your own case, you were in account management for quite a few years in agencies, and do you think it's also because agencies with their clients are inclined to build it on almost personal relationships rather than a professional relationship?
Yeah, and again, I guess that does go back to human nature that we, that's how we, by giving empathy to people and building trust with people, is how you put a good relationship together, foster a good relationship. So, you're right, I guess. A lot of agencies do build their client relationships based on a personal one-on-one sort of relationship. So perhaps that's the nature of what clients are used to.
Trinity P3.
Now, I want to throw in a bit of a left field one, and this came out of not the research scoring, but the commentary that we invited the agencies to provide. And there were quite a number of very detailed, and when I say number, a handful, four or five, detailed comments, which we didn't put in the research, but inferred that the agency felt that the pitch process was pre-decided and that they were just being run through a process so that the client could actually then appoint their preferred and pre-decided. I just want to get a very honest response from each of you. How often have you been aware of that in a pitch that you've run? And please be honest, okay?
Quite often. Quite often it starts like that. And through counsel, we're able to mitigate for that. And sometimes that involves telling an agency that they're not in a, you know, they're not selected to continue, rather than wasting their time. But sometimes these agendas stay right until the end of the pitch.
Yeah,
it's my honest opinion.
It does happen
repeatedly. It does happen. Absolutely happens.
Lydia, is that your experience?
No, I haven't really had too many of those, actually. Maybe I've been lucky, but I haven't had where I've had a predetermined. During the pitch, there's often a favourite that becomes clear, but not predetermined.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So quite a different experience. Yeah. But, you know, to Ellie's point, the process of a consultant is that if that is the start point, to work through that to make sure they consider everyone equally. Nathan, what's your perspective?
I've kind of worked for years on the assumption that that is going to be the case, and so you know before we even engage as pitch consultants with any marketer, you kind of hold their feet to the fire and you look them in the whites of the eyes and make sure that actually it's a legitimate pitch, that the pitch is the best thing to do, and we haven't even touched on that because it's not necessarily on this agenda, but you know 50% of the time we actually manage to convince the marketer that the pitch is not the answer to the problem they're trying to solve. And certainly if you get distorted outcomes like a favorite is going to go through, or it's cost-led and not capability-led, or actually it's a way of making the incumbent, you know, sharpen their pencil or any of these other rubbish phrases, you know, that's a signifier of something that should never have got to a pitch. So I hope we sniff them out, and I hope we convert them back to something a bit more sensible and commercial, maybe a few slip through and well, let's be honest, sometimes we withdraw from that pitch process if it isn't legit and it isn't right, because, you know, principles aren't principles till they cost you money, huh?
Yeah. Ellie?
Oh, I think the other thing I'd add, as Lydia was talking then, you know, we've had maybe different experiences, but and I was thinking of examples. I think it does come back to the mix of business and personal, interpersonal relationships particularly. I mean, the biggest example, and I'm not going to name any names, obviously, but the biggest example I ran was a significant pitch where the CMO had previously been at one of the agencies for a long time. And surprise, surprise, that agency ended up winning. And, you know, we did everything we could to make that process fair and with integrity. But if senior people with long-standing personal relationships are at the top of that, it can be very difficult to prevent those outcomes, or to at least drive those outcomes in the best way possible.
Yeah, Kylie, you have a particularly refined EQ. You know, have you sniffed out any of these in any of the pitches you've been involved in?
I think back to Nathan saying, I would hope that we wouldn't work with a client that has a predetermined result in their head. You know, what a waste of everybody's time and money. And I think respect, again, is something that is hopefully a moral that I think most people at Trinity P3 try to uphold, the morals of the marketing landscape. I've been probably through the process that we run, we may have had pretty firm decisions in heads of pitch teams on the client side that we've actually managed through our process and our industry knowledge. We've been able to persuade them or open their eyes to other options, and there have been different results. And on the other side of the coin, we've also worked on pitches where the client has had incumbents that they're ready to throw out and, you know, discontinue the relationship with, however, through the due diligence of the process and allowing the agency to represent themselves in areas that the client probably hasn't even entertained or questioned before, has turned the whole decision process around and managed to retain the business.
Yeah, no, thank you. Anton, have you had that experience?
I've only had it once in, what's it now been, 13, 14 years. Luckily, so I think to Kylie's point, we'll sniff out pretty quickly whether anyone's predetermined or made a pre-decision. But, yeah, only once. So I think it's a small number. I think probably another point to add to this is at the end of the day, you know, it's Trinity P3. We don't make decisions. The client makes the decisions. So really it's the marketer and their teams that are making decisions. And back to one of the earlier points we talked about, you know, customizing, it's really up to the client how they want to act. We're just helping them facilitate to try and find the right match. And the matches are different. Some want very functional agencies, some want great strategic agencies, some want fully integrated agencies. You know, the needs are all very different. So I guess we just have to be eyes open to what the clients want and what their level of EQ and IQ and requirements are. But that's different in every case, isn't it? But no, to answer the question, only once, luckily.
Well, look, from my own experience, the first thing I think, the fact that we ask the client up front what agencies they would like to see us consider is really interesting, because I've always found most will say if they're going to nominate, they'll nominate two or three. I'm always suspicious when a client comes up with one name and one name only. It means that they're very focused on the agency that they want to put in there. And I have in the early days had a situation where it was very clear that this was preset. So what we actually did was talk them into doing a much smaller pitch process where we only put one other agency in there and made it a credentials-only presentation and then financials, but told the agency they were doing it and paid a pitch fee for their time. So I think, you know, if you need to appoint an agency, either as a CMO, either have the bravery to just appoint them, right? And if you're going to have to go to any sort of competitive, make the minimum amount of damage possible was always my go-to position on that.
I think sometimes it's apparent early on, sometimes it's much later in the day. It is a relatively small number, I guess, in the overall scheme of things. But I think, I mean, to Anton's point, we are not making these decisions. And so when these situations arise, you just got to be unshakable in your objectivity. And you know, the job that we have to facilitate a strong assessment process, whether the client chooses to make that decision at the end of the day or not is ultimately up to them. I've had a couple of examples where I've been asked to doctor marks, to change assessment marks to make one agency look better than the other. And I refused, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
I refused. Now, whether they choose to interpret that or take it away or do something differently with it, okay, fine. And it feels like maybe I've just been unlucky working with some of these organisations.
They're throwing the ball.
Please don't anyone look back at my history of the pitches I've worked on. You might be able to work it out. But it's... all we can do in that environment is either change the process, like, you know, or refuse the process and walk away, which we have done, or be the voice of objectivity in the room and make sure that the rigor of the assessment is true to form. Ultimately, they can then make a decision on that basis.
Now, look, unfortunately, we're rapidly running out of time. So I'm going to do a quick run around the room with what do you think should be the one thing marketers and procurement should take away from this research? What's the one thing? Nathan, I think you probably said yours in the previous question, which is about, you know, being very focused on why you're pitching and whether you really need to. But if you want to restate that, please do, or come up with another one. But I think it's a really good point.
In the interest of time, Dan, I'll stick with that. And I'll yield the time to my colleagues who spend much more time actually running pitches than I do these days. So I'm happy with that.
Okay. Lydia.
I would say the one thing is that the process you're running fits or needs to fit the requirements of the brief and the desired outcome. And then if you set up the wrong process, you're at risk of everyone wasting everyone's time, money and effort. I had to say it in one point.
Excellent. Thank you. Kylie.
Commitment and direction.
Commitment. Commit to it and be very clear on direction. Well done. Anton.
I'll say one word three times. Customize, customize, customize. Is that one point? Yeah, I think the thought here is think about the relationship 3 years down the track. So you want to treat the agency and find the right agency as if you're going to have them 3 years down the track. So that should hopefully highlight some respect, some building of great relationships, open, transparent communication in thinking about it as a really long-term great partnership, not just a tick of the box and, you know, we've had to go to pitch and we've ticked the box and done that process.
Okay. Ellie?
Three words. Can I use one word three times like Anton? Alignment.
No, it was, what's the one thing they should take away from
thought.
It?
It's just, they should take away. Look, align before you start on all of this stuff. Build the plane before you fly it. Don't build the plane as you fly it. You know, on all of the things we've been talking about, alignment up front is really important.
Okay, and we'll finish with Lord Nathan of Hodges.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. I had to come back with one more point. Anton just triggered something in my head. If you're going to take anything out of this as a marketer and you're going to design a pitch process, the core principle to have in your head is that the process needs to allow you to work out and find out as far as is possible within a pitch process what it would be like for this agency and your team to work together in the long term. And you need to get as close to that as you possibly can within the artificial confines of a pitch process. And if you use that as a foundation for every decision you make about how to design process and how to assess agencies you go, then you'll go, I wouldn't say you'll go far wrong, but you'll go a lot less far wrong than people seem to be at the moment.
Less far wrong. It sounds almost like a dish at my local restaurant.
That's the last thing I'm saying on this podcast, and I've come up with a phrase like less far wrong. I'd hang my head in shame.
That's the thing you
hate,
Nathan.
So not you.
More coffee required, I think.
Look, it's been a great conversation. I want to thank you all for participating. Kylie Ridler-Dutton, Lydia Feely, Nathan Hodges, Ellie Angel and Anton Bushner, thank you very much. Now get back to work. And for everyone else, the State of the Pitch in Australia research report is available at trinityp3.com/stateofthepitch with hyphens between each one. And thank you very much for joining Managing Marketing.